welcome to another episode of Banking Matters. We are very excited today. We have Texas Bankers Association President Chris Furlow with us. This is our 100th episode of the podcast, and we wanted a super special guest, and we have him today. I am looking forward to this conversation so much to learn from the wisdom, the work, the advocacy that Chris puts into advancing our industry, not only for Texas banks, but for banks across the nation. I would like to start with just a brief bio to introduce Chris, and then we're going to have a pretty exciting conversation about the work you're doing right now. Chris Furlow is President and Chief Executive Officer of the Texas Bankers Association, America's oldest and largest state banking organization. TBA advocates for nearly 400 of its member banks in Austin and Washington, trains more than 10,000 bankers annually, provides nationally recognized community banking services in 49 states, and invests in Texas communities through financial literacy, scholarship, and charitable activities. Under Chris's leadership, TBA has launched groundbreaking community bank cybersecurity and bank innovation capabilities, and has successfully challenged Washington's regulatory overreach. So Chris, thank you for being on the podcast today. I am excited to talk on a couple different topics. I would like to hear, first off, if you're willing to talk to us about the litigation efforts going on right now. What is TBA doing in terms of litigation? Where are we at? And what can you tell us about some of the court cases going on right now?
Yeah, you bet. And Elizabeth, thanks very much for having me on the show today. And I don't think I'm 100th episode worthy, but I'll do my best. Again, thanks so much. You know, I think as we look at the last four years or so, the regulatory environment, it was critical that TBA, on behalf of our nearly 400 member banks, and frankly, on behalf of banks across the country, particularly community banks, really interject ourselves into the process through the courts. And it's simply because there was no voice for our banks on things, especially like CFPB's Section 1071 Small Business Data Collection Rule. This was a rule that ignored the commentary provided. It ignored the Biden administration's own Small Business Administration, which said that the data collection rule would actually harm small business lending. And it ignored state regulators who said the same thing. It was very clear CFPB was not listening. And this was going to be very destructive, certainly to community banks in terms of the compliance regimens that would be have been put into effect. But ultimately, it would harm the communities that our banks serve and the small business people. And so we sued, and we were proud to lead that effort. We were later joined by the American Bankers Association as a co-plaintiff, and later by other trade associations. But it was really important for us to step forward on behalf of our community banks. And I have to thank our former chairman, Ford Sasser from Rio Bank. He was an MDI down in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas. He knew what this would do to his small business customers, and he stepped up as well. And where we are is we sued in the South Texas court. We got a preliminary injunction that went into effect for almost 300 days. And I think what that has done is it gave our banks some cushion until we could work the political process and tell Congress, hey, this is not working. It also gave us an opportunity to see how the political process might catch up. And certainly last November that happened. Now, the South Texas court has initially ruled against us, but we're now in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in New Orleans. And again, how this helped out, the lawsuit helped out, is now CFPB actually asked for a pause in proceedings, which in essence continues this long pause until our leaders in Washington and Congress, there's some bills to actually repeal Section 1071. And we can talk about that if you'd like. But I think the main thing is that it gave the political process and oversight the opportunity to catch up with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which under Mr. Chopra, unfortunately, was very ideological And essentially, banking was politicized. So in that regard, very, very pleased. Now, that wasn't the only suit. We had also joined a number of business organizations, the American Bankers Association, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, our community banking organization here in the state, and some local chambers like the Longview Chamber, in challenging the UDAP guidance that CFPB also put out without following the Administrative Procedure Act. In that case, we got a full victory. Now, CFPB was followed that up with an appeal. And then there was the CRA, 1,500 pages. Now, if y'all can look, and I might get this wrong. So, but right there, that's the stack of regulations. It's nearly 3 feet tall that came out in 2023 alone. And it included the new CRA proposal, the modernization that the joint regulators pushed out, nearly 1,500 pages. And we sued on that as well. And again, it's because the agencies failed to follow the Administrative Procedures Act and really take legitimately taking comment in regard. So those were three different suits. On the CRA suit, we actually got a preliminary injunction, which remains in place. Mm-hmm. And now, again, the political process has had a chance to catch up. The joint regulators have said that they intend to pull back from that. Now, we're going to continue to press on our legal cases because we need to have some precedent set. And the political winds change. And so we need to make sure that agencies, regardless of whether it's a Democrat or a Republican administration, know that they have to stick to what Congress asked them to do. And they, as well as the banks, have to follow the law, and in their case, the Administrative Procedure Act. So it was a long-winded answer, but we've got a lot of legal actions that we're a part of.
I appreciate that summary. Sometimes, to me, that was a very brief summary of very complex legal proceedings that TBA has been the leader on. And to me, I'm just so impressed on how TBA has been leading the charge using the three branches of government, which is, you know, bedrock of our nation. We're working in the judicial system as well as looking at the executive branch. You know, we got the CFPB under there, and then also on the legislative side, because that's how we're interacting, and there are those different angles to come at. I would love to segue a little bit then and to talk about the legislative work, both in Texas and on the national front, and how Texas also is maybe kind of leading the charge and can be a leader on the national side as well.
Yeah, you bet. We've had a change in leadership of the Financial Services Committee in the U.S. House, and the person now leading the way is a former community banker with ties to Texas. And so we certainly appreciate that. But I think it's really that Congressman French Hill from Arkansas, being a former community banker, understands our industry firsthand. This is not something that they've picked up. He's actually been in the business. And I think that has led to a true change in the way we'll see things certainly come out of the House of Representatives. His agenda in running for chairman of the House Financial Services Committee was make community banking great again. This was a hat when he came to he visited TBA. We actually gave him a hat. But when you look at that agenda, it was very clear. He came to Texas last year and listened to our bankers. And when you see the make community banking great again agenda, these are all things that are important to our community bankers across the state of Texas. And so we've been very proud to work with his team as well as our Texas delegation to move the ball on some things. So what are those issues that are predominant on our list? And, you know, the first thing is a repeal of Section 1071 altogether. As you had mentioned, we do have a three-pronged strategy attacking things from the courts, as well as going to the administration, say there are things you can do administratively to make changes now that we've seen the change in administrations, and then the legislative route. And H.R. 976 is a repeal of 1071 sponsored by Texas Congressman and Chair of the Small Business Committee, Roger Williams. Okay. And we think that this is one of the fastest ways that we can just do away with this thing. Now, last year in Congress, even as bitterly divided as it was, you had a different administration, Congress passed with a Democrat-controlled Senate and a Republican House, essentially a nullification of 1071, but President Biden vetoed it. So now there's going to be another shot at that, and that's certainly at the top of our list with the new administration. The other thing is, let's either eliminate or certainly make some serious reforms to the structure of CFPB. One of the reasons it was politicized was because there's no accountability, and it was set up that way. Senator Elizabeth Warren is no fan of the banking industry, and she built CFPB to be unaccountable. How? Because it's off congressional appropriations. Think about that. Of all the agencies in the federal government, only CFPB simply would send a letter to the Federal Reserve saying how much money they would like, and off they went. And so Congress, members of Congress, could shake their fingers at Rohit Chopra all they wanted, but he really didn't care. He was trying to go as far and as fast as he could. So what do we need to do to make sure that, again, regardless of who's in charge, that the agency is accountable? Number one, put them on appropriations. And number two, this agency was given the director so much power over such a large swath of our economy. Let's put it under a bipartisan commission of five members. And obviously, you're going to see some changes depending on who holds the administration in the White House. But it won't be these wide swings that our banks. Our banks want consistency and certainly reason. And so that's one of the things that we want to do. Another thing is for accountability for the entire industry. And what we've asked for is the Fair Exams Act. And what this simply would do, if there is a determination made by an examiner, by a federal regulatory agency that the bank disagrees with, you don't have to go back to that same regulator. There's an independent body that is going to look at that appeal. And we are very proud to say this is something that TBA and some of our bank members like IBC have pushed very hard for. And Chairman French Hill is going to carry that legislation. So the chairman of the committee is going to do that. So we're really, really happy with that. There are a couple of other issues just want to touch on briefly. And please stop me if there are things that you have questions about. But we really need to prioritize deposit insurance reform. If you think about it, we've seen no real changes in deposit insurance since we had the bank failures in 2023, in the spring of 2023. Mm-hmm. And what TBA has is a plan that would institute a tag-like program so that if there is a national emergency of some sort, the president can declare it and it would kick in automatically. So there's no voodoo that has to take place between the FDIC and the Fed and all the political decisions that come into that, that it takes that out. But it would help to protect particularly community banks and give depositors in community banks confidence that they don't have to have their accounts run off. And that's good for everybody, quite frankly, because it's about settling things down. And again, if we don't have changes like this, if we don't make the changes now when we're not in crisis, it's going to be a disaster when we are. That's when really bad decisions are made. So those are among our tops. There are two other things, and especially for our ag bankers. Texas is a huge ag state, and we really want to see the ACRE Act pass. This is a bill, access to credit for our rural economy, which would essentially level the playing field with farm credit on ag real estate loans and for our rural communities. And again, not asking to take anything away from farm credit. Our banks compete against each other. We're not afraid against competing with farm credit. But it is a shame that a government-sponsored enterprise gets an advantage over community banks who are closest to the people that they serve. And so we certainly want to see ACRE Act passed. And recently we visited the White House with the National Economic Council team to talk about these things, made a visit to the USDA as well. So we're actively advocating with our members of Congress as well on the ACRE Act. The final thing, there's a lot of interchange legislation that's being proposed. You know, it's kind of follow on to the Durbin Amendment in 2010. Smaller institutions were told, hey, don't worry, this won't apply to you. Well, look, we all know that card interchange, this is an interconnected global payment system. And regardless of the politics of what folks say, at the end of the day, there are impacts. Unfortunately, some folks don't want to pay for the fees. And what are the fees pay for. They pay for a efficient system that's quick for the consumer, that offers rewards, but most importantly, it's secure. It's worked very well. And the fees have remained flat, usually between 2 and 3, 3.5% for over a decade. And yet folks are saying, oh, our fees are going. Well, what's happening is the amount collected is going up in dollars, but that's because people are using their cards more. And these merchants are seeing that their customers use their cards more. So there's certainly some arguments that we could get into in that regard, but essentially that hurts banks if they're going to try the government try to intervene in private contracts. Because remember, a merchant doesn't have to use a credit card. Yep. Cash costs as high as 9%, and folks are complaining about a system that works efficiently all over the globe. Yep. And we're fighting some of that at the state level as well. So I know that was long-winded. But there's so many things that we're trying to work for on behalf of our industry and the communities that our banks serve.
I'm excited that there are so many issues that TBA is working on, that TBA is providing leadership on the national front regarding. Just touching on one of them, the ACRE Act is something that's very close to the heart of the community where I have roots. My roots are in Iowa, deeply rural area where farming is just one of the backbones of the community. And the ACRE Act has been very important to some folks in Iowa. And I think maybe some of the national legislature has also been seeing some leadership from Iowa leaders as well. I would love to hear a little bit more about your stance on that, what you think maybe are the chances, because the ACRE Act has been, you would know more than me, but I think it's been pushed and proposed a couple times and didn't really go anywhere. What are your thoughts on the success and the chances right now?
Well, just so you know, I've got a son who lives in Iowa. He's in the pork industry, so he's an ag guy. He works for the
there
Pork Producer Council and went to Iowa State. By the way, my wife
go
is a
Iowa
Texas
State.
Aggie. Was not happy about that, but hey, we're still proud of him nonetheless. look, the ACRE Act is really about supporting the community. It's not if you think about what's been happening to our farmers and ranchers over the last few years, so much uncertainty. As you know, Congress has failed for another year to pass a farm bill. We're now in, I think, year 7, and it's supposed to be about a 5-year cycle on the farm bill. So how can our ag community banks in particular help farmers and ranchers? And it's through competition. Let's not have a government-sponsored enterprise, be the only game in town. Let's keep those dollars local. Our bankers, as I mentioned earlier, are absolutely willing to compete, but the playing field has to be level for that. Yeah. And so, our message is, give us a chance to compete. We think we'll win with farmers and ranchers, but it's not taking anything away from farm credit. This is about competition, because the ultimate winner in that circumstance are going to be farmers and ranchers. And so that's our perspective on that. Again, we've been very heavily invested in working with our state banking association partners, particularly in America's heartland. So with the Kansas bankers and Oklahoma and Missouri, all the way up to Minnesota and Wisconsin, kind of in the central states. And just so proud of the work with our banking associations there to really push this through, because ag is so important here in Texas and so important to the country.
It is. It's kind of, coming from the heartland, growing up in the Midwest, it's the heartbeat of a lot of communities. And to have that kind of legislation that's taking a look at how banks can then reinvest back into the small communities, larger communities too, but, so often this type of thing is going to affect rural communities where their economies are really dependent on those small farms, those ranches. Giving banks a little bit of a leg up on some of that. I'm excited to see where that legislation is going to go.
Yeah.
Switching gears a little bit, I would love to spend the rest of the episode, if we can, talking a little bit on your thoughts on crypto and banking. This is a hot button topic, and there's a lot of feelings running high and also some uncertainty about how this is going to become an impact in the industry. And I would really, really love to hear your thoughts on the whole topic and what wisdom you can share on that.
Well, it's really important for those listening today, especially if they're community bankers, to understand that what's happening in the digital asset space, particularly right now around the stablecoin debate. This is not something that's about the future. This is about the here and now. Is it about the future? Yes, absolutely. It's going to be about your bank's future. But know that this is not a debate that we're going to have over the next 5 to 10 years. And at some point, it's going to kick in. This debate is happening right now in Washington, D.C. The Trump administration is intent on passing digital asset legislation. I don't know. Our viewers today might remember that not long after the president took office, he actually had a crypto summit that took place at the White House. And so there is a strong desire on the part of this administration to have a crypto-related agenda. And how that's initially rolling out is related to stable coins. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, in essence, unlike other forms of digital assets, this is the, you know, it has to be matched with a dollar. So that's what's coming out first. And you're going to see Congress is already in the Senate Banking Committee led by Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina. They've already passed a bill out of committee in that regard. The House is working on legislation for that right now. The concerns that we have about it, and I have to say up front, digital assets are going to be part of our future. The question is, how will that be regulated? And will the playing field be fair? And that's where TBA is really trying to focus our attention. So we kind of have some guidelines that we're fighting for as these bills start to roll out. And I think the very first thing is that there shouldn't be some separate, unregulated crypto or digital asset banking system. And our concern there was that it will pull resources out of our community banks. So in regard to, for example, stablecoin, we don't want to see non-bank players in the space, for example, paying out interest like you would see a bank. So as these things happen, that's one of the principles. The other is, hey, let's have a level playing field, right? It shouldn't be essentially the fintech bros and, you know, the capital investors in these forms of assets really calling the shots. Let's have a level playing field. Same activity, same regulation. A lot of proponents of digital assets are saying, well, the banking system's too slow. It's antiquated. Well, there's a reason, and that's because banks are highly regulated, and it's intended to protect consumers, and so we want to make sure that that is in place. And another key principle is no FDIC insurance for these non-bank players in this space. You may recall that when FTX went down, all of a sudden you had a number of people saying, "Hey, there's this FDIC insurance thing that should make me whole." Well, frankly, Elizabeth, that shows that people don't know how FDIC insurance works. They don't understand that the banks, not the taxpayers, pay the premiums on that. Yeah. And so that's another fundamental principle that we have as these bills are rolled out. So my guidance to our bankers are start to be engaged. Educate yourself in this space. It's going to be a competitive marketplace. Mm-hmm. There are some banks who are leaning forward in this space to learn more and to offer stablecoin, for example. Find out where you're going to be in that space. What we'll do on the TBA side is be able to advocate that if you determine that that's the best way for your bank in the future to participate, that there should be a level playing field and you can compete in that for your community bank. So that's kind of where we are there, Lou.
I appreciate that summary, and I'm the first to admit that I have a lot of ignorance in terms of crypto, and, you know, I've educated myself on just some of the terminology, and so much of it is changing that some of us just need, you know, a basic vocabulary on what some of these terms mean and how crypto even works from a technology standpoint. Mm-hmm. But I keep latching on to that you're talking about specifically stablecoin, and just to make sure that I understand that, that really is kind of like a dollar for dollar match. Is that correct? That's not where like the valuation is fluctuating. Banks don't have to deal with that type of valuation issue with stablecoin. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. And I think, look, if we're going to move into the space, that's how you want this discussion to start rather than with crypto. If you think about it, In terms of crypto, how many different forms of cryptocurrencies are there? I mean, literally, it's into the thousands. In some places, like here in Texas, they're talking about a Bitcoin reserve, for example, because they focused on Bitcoin as probably the best, most well-known and the most stable of the cryptocurrencies. But, you know, stablecoin is a bit of a different animal. And with the dollar for dollar aspect to it, I think that's why Congress is probably choosing to start there first.
Sure, sure. And in terms of how banks would be interacting with this, is this something where banks would have to like handle interchange? Would they be cashing out in US dollars from stablecoin, or would these be kind of separate transactional activities going on where things would be happening in stablecoin kind of parallel to someone who's doing transactions in US dollars?
Well, that's a very good question. I think that's why this debate is so important, and it's very important that we have our principles and we stick to those as this legislation is developed. You can talk to different players in the space and they'll tell you different things. Oh yeah, there's a plan. Well, that's why the legislation on how this will actually work is so important and why our banks have to be engaged. Because if they're not, other people will make the decision about the ability of community banks to play in this space. And it's why education is such an important thing.
Mm-hmm. So now's kind of the time for people who are going to be industry players who are going to be affected by this to start using voices, to start advocating for how this could best be crafted to benefit those of us in the industry who are going to be touched by it. Is that kind of one of the takeaways we can get?
Absolutely. And again, I can't stress the urgency, because these bills, for example, on stablecoin are moving now. This is not a discussion, again, that's going to be in a couple of years or something like that. Mm-hmm. And certainly for our members and other folks, if you'd like more information, you can reach out to us, and more than happy to share information about what's moving through Congress right now.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my questions as well, is if bankers do want to get involved in advocacy for how they want to see stablecoin specifically, what are the next steps? Is it just to reach out, to get involved?
Yeah, sure. Here in Texas, it can be to TBA for folks watching today who are in other states. Reach out to your state banking association for resources and information, and participate in the process. You know, just as we're going to fight policies that do not help our banks and do not help the communities that they serve, we want to make sure that we're advocating for things as well. In this case, there's a little bit of push and a pull. It's like, how do we ensure that our community banks can compete in the space on a level playing field? On the same token, we want to make sure that we're pushing back against things we think will be destructive to the traditional community banking system as well.
Yeah. I hear a lot of folks who are anxious or concerned about questions about crypto or, you know, stablecoin. But on the flip side, it's a very exciting time right now. It's a time when there's a lot of moving pieces and folks can be using their voices to really make an impact right now. And I appreciate that emphasis that you're bringing to this, that the way to combat, you know, uncertainty or some concern is to get involved and, you know, help shape things the way that it would be best for those of us representing certain industry components like banks.
You're spot on. And it really does go across the board. This is a critically important time for community banking across the board. The opportunities to push back on hyper regulation, the ability to ask for a focus from our regulators on safety and soundness, and not all of these other agendas or politicized aspects being brought into banking. I guess we could say, you know, I'm a fan for make banking boring again, right? Let's let the system work. Let's let bankers do what they do. What we do on the customer side can be exciting, but from a regulatory standpoint, you know, let's get some consistency so that our banks can operate and make the exciting part on who you lend to and what you can do in your communities.
I love that. Let's get some boring back into our jobs, and then people like me, you know, I'm a self-professed nerd. I'm not going to call anyone else a nerd, but I really enjoy the boring side of things. And we just want some stability and some consistency so that we can serve customers and communities and keep on doing what community banks do best.
That's it.
Yeah. Well, Chris, I appreciate your time so much. Anytime I hear you speak, anytime I engage with you, I learn so much from you. I am incredibly impressed by the work you're doing, the work you've done in the past, the leadership you show, and also just, you know, yourself with your career as a role model to some of us who are hoping to spend many more decades working in this area. It has been my pleasure to speak with you. Anything else you would like to share with our listeners here on the podcast before we wrap up?
Look, Elizabeth, you've been very kind. Thanks very much for having me today. I just want to encourage, we all love banking because we know that it's a noble profession. We get the benefit of seeing every day what especially our community bankers are doing, how they're helping small businesses and families reach their goals. What they do from a charitable standpoint is just immense. They often don't get credit for that. So it's an honor to fight on behalf of our banks and our community bankers here in Texas and all over the country. And I love working with my fellow state banking executives across the country as well, because we're united in these efforts to really make community banking great again.
There we go. Let's keep on doing the work to benefit our communities, and we'll keep on taking one step at a time. Thank you so much, Chris, for your time. And thank you to folks who tuned in for our 100th episode. It is truly my honor to have spoken with Chris today. We appreciate everyone who has supported the podcast through this many episodes, and we're looking forward to the next 100. Chris, thank you again for your time, and have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Take care.